crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtigal. We're coming to you today from England, the United Kingdom, in Warwickshire. I'll be here for another couple of days before I return back to Jerusalem with my family. So next Sunday, we'll be recording from Jerusalem. Well, last Sunday, there was a devastating attack, or a number of attacks, really, against the Coptic Christians in Egypt. No doubt you've heard about this, but this is something that I want to talk about on today's program. Not just the news of those attacks, because it seems that they are coming in quick succession these days, but really what it means for the world at large, for the Middle East, and especially what it means for Europe as well. On this program, we talk a lot about the Middle East. Obviously, this is broadcast or prepared from Jerusalem, Israel, and it does concern the nation of Israel. It concerns the nation surrounding Israel, but also it concerns the world at large, because the Middle East, as so is often the case, is really the focus of other powers, whether it be the United States, whether it be Russia, or whether it even be the European Union. Now, when it comes to these attacks on Christians throughout the Middle East, we have seen them for a number of years, but they are reaching a tipping point where people are beginning to sit up and take notice. Now, this is a terrifyingly dangerous time to be a Christian in the Middle East, just as it is a terrifying time to be a Jew in the Middle East as well. And we often hear stats of the Jewish exodus from Middle Eastern states that has taken place over the past half century as the Middle East becomes more and more hateful, spiteful towards the Jews, to the point of driving them from their countries through persecution. And we've noted that. But fast forward to this past decade, and we have seen an equally shocking Christian exodus from the Middle East. And the big question is, how long can this go on? How long can it go on until somebody acts on it? Now, the largest Christian community right now in the Middle East, remaining in the Middle East, is the one in Egypt, where about 10% of Egypt's 95 million people are Coptic Christians, whether they be the Catholic variety, the Protestant variety, and that is a sizable chunk of the country. And yet that is where we're seeing this latest manifestation of Islamic jihad against Christianity in Egypt. And just this past week, I put an article up on Watch Jerusalem. It's entitled "Holy War is Becoming Reality in Egypt." And the quip reads, "How long before someone stands up for Egypt's Christians? How long is it going to take?" Now, there was two bombings last Sunday, as we've talked about. They killed almost 50 people. And whether you like it or not, or whether you want to admit it or not, this is a crusade. Now, crusades normally go the other way. Crusades going from a Catholic Europe coming down to the Middle East to remove Islam, followers of Islam, from Jerusalem. Well, in this case, we're having Islam fight against different Christian communities throughout the Middle East, and this latest one taking place inside Egypt. Now, the Islamic State, when they claimed credit for these two attacks that almost killed the Coptic Christian Pope last Sunday, this is what they said. Quote, "The Crusaders and their apostate followers must be aware that the bill between us and them is very large, and they will be paying it like a river of blood from their sons, if God is willing." So clearly the Islamic State, people that live in the 21st century today, believe there is this holy war that's taking place. And their view of history goes back thousands of years, and they see that there is a big debt that is to be owed to the Christians. And the Catholics, those Crusaders, and their apostate followers, as which you would call these Copts, the Coptic Christians inside Egypt. So they're clearly viewing this as a attack on a religion. That's what they're targeting. Now, they used to target the troops of Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, the president of Israel, of Egypt. He obviously removed Mohamed Morsi, whom the Islamic State is upset about still, just like the Muslim Brotherhood were upset about. They were removed, and immediately after that time, because the Christians there in Egypt did support Sisi's takeover of that Islamic really leaning government, well, now they, since that time, since 2013, they have been attacked. But just recently, in the past three or four months, those attacks have increased from this group calling themselves the Islamic State, or at least the Islamic State affiliate in the Sinai. They used to, for the past couple of years, have been attacking the military, taking down as best they could helicopters or attacking installations of the military in the Sinai. Now they're not doing that as much. Now they are starting to attack Christians wherever they are. And Sisi is doing his best to protect them, because he knows that part of this attack on the Christians from Islamic State is to get to him as well, to undermine a lot of his base. And yet he's doing the best he can to protect them. But it's not enough. But there is another power that is going to come to the aid of these Christians in Egypt. We don't know when this is going to happen, but the Bible does reveal that it will happen. There is someone coming to fight for the Coptic Christians in Egypt and the other Christians in the Middle East. Now, before I go into who that's going to be, I do want to quote heavily today from this piece, "When the West Lets Christianity Die in Its Cradle." And it appeared on April 12th in World Crunch, and it's a really important piece because it highlights trends that we've been talking about for a long, long time, for decades, in fact. And it is something that I would read if I were you. I'll leave the link to it in the show notes. It's a piece that, if you've been following us for a long time, some of it reads like something you would listen to or hear about on Watch Jerusalem. Now, it's written from Montreal, but it's written to Matthew Bock-Cote. I think he is from Europe originally. And this is how he starts it out. And again, this is in the context of these attacks that took place on Sunday against the Copts. And yet, really, if you're looking at what's happened over the past decade in the Middle East, this is not an isolated event, as we'll cover. But the question is, of course, again, when will somebody do something about it? When is it going too far? When will this push from these Islamic nations or the Islamic State, these non-state actors, when will that motivate a Christian protector? This is how he begins. "The Western world has long gotten used to the persecution of Christians in the Middle East as if their bad lot is inevitable and has to simply be accepted. As if Christianity is destined to die or have no more than a residual existence in what used to be its cradle, the Middle East. The Middle East. While there might not be many Christians in the Middle East today, I'm just talking now, that is where it began, right? That is where it began. That's all through the Middle Eastern nations. I'll give you some stats later on. There were millions of Christians. Not anymore. Not anymore." He continues, "Christians have been rooted in the region for 2,000 years, and yet Islamists present them as invaders or foreign agents soiling a land that should be exclusively dedicated to Islam. And in our societies, people who express concern over the fate of those Christians are suspected of cozying up to the far right, which has managed, apparently, to appropriate this cause and make it an ideological marker. Those same critics who accuse anyone who feels passionate about the cause of Christians in the Middle East of actually concealing a shameful Islamophobia or identitarian view of Christianity. Justifiable outrage over what, in reality, is a steady massacre gets dismissed as a reactionary whim." So it's saying that it's gotten to the point in our multicultural Western societies, where even if you express concern for the greatest mass exodus of our time, that of Christians from the Middle East, then you are called a Islamophobe, or you are from the far right. Nobody, it seems, can stand up vocally for the Christians of the Middle East. Well, that's going to change. And that's the point of this piece here, again, written in World Crunch, I think it was in Figaro, an Italian piece, Italian paper, "When the West Lets Christianity Die in Its Cradle." He continues here, "But as the savage attacks against two Coptic Christian churches in Egypt on Palm Sunday remind us, the war of extermination being waged against Christians in the Middle East is very real indeed. And we know the result, at least 43 dead, a massacre. ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack, the organization having made no secret of its goal to eradicate Christianity from the region, either by murdering Christians or by expelling them massively. For ISIS," he writes, "it's about making Christians understand that this land is no longer their home. For a long time, we've been saying that Christians in the Middle East need a protector. This has never been truer. But who is willing to play that role?" Who's willing to play that role? That's a good question. That's a good question. Millions of Jews and millions of Christians have been pushed out of these Middle Eastern countries, countries where they've been for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and yet they've been pushed out. He continues, "But who is willing to play that role? France was for many years. Over the past few years, Putin's Russia has claimed that role as if it was being called to take over as Europe renounces its Christian origins. Now Middle Eastern Christians feel abandoned, especially when they refuse to leave a region of the world in which they have put down roots. We need to have," he writes, "a comprehensive view of this gruesome undertaking because it doesn't just impact Christians. Think of the Buddhas of the Bamiyan, blown up in March 2001, you'll remember that, the destructive fury inside Mosul's museum in 2015, or in Palmyra the same year. For Islamists, it's about erasing all traces of what is foreign to Islam, as if the religion's reign can't endure the mere reminder that in these locations in the times gone by, men worshipped other gods, kept a different faith. How can we not see that this is a frightening form of nihilism, an annihilating enjoyment, a destructive exhilaration? The most radical Islamism doesn't just want to make men disappear, it wants to erase the memory of man. And that's what it's doing. And that's why it desires to destroy and does destroy places of historical significance, be it what they've destroyed in Nineveh, or ancient Nineveh around in Mosul, what they've done at Palmyra, the Islamic State, or what they would do if they got a hold of Jerusalem." He continues, "The war against remembrance is the uninhabited expression unhibited expression of savagery. The old stones just aren't old stones. They are evidence of a human desire to immortalize oneself from one time to another. They represent the trace of lost worlds that we refuse to sacrifice altogether to oblivion. But in the case of Christians," he writes, "that's what they're doing to the physical antiquities in these countries. But he says this, as in the case of Christians, it's also about getting rid of a people. As if their submission is no longer enough. It wasn't enough that they were willing to submit. It isn't enough that they were willing to be the minorities in our countries and probably not have the rights that we would afford others. It's not enough anymore. We don't accept that. We are getting rid of these people. They need to be removed, killed or leave." Then he writes, "We know that in less than a century, the demographic weight of the Middle East has dropped in an unprecedented fashion." And that's the case. Looking around the Middle East, just do some searches by demographics. And what do you find? You find a reduction of Jews in these other countries. And you find a substantial reduction of Christians. A century ago, Christians made up around 25 to 30% of the Middle East population. That's quite a lot. Not quite a third, just over a quarter. Guess what that is right now? 3%. 3% of the Middle East is now Christian. And that's 10% of what it was way back 100 years ago. In 2002, the number of Christians in Iraq was estimated to be 1 million. 1 million in 2002. In 2006, that number was around 700,000. It is now below 300,000 in Iraq. And it looks like we've got about 60,000 to 100,000 Christians leaving each year. So that's going to be a couple more years and the Iraqi Christians are no longer. There might be a handful that remain, but you know, in Iraq, they were a million. 15 years ago, a million was there. Now there's less than 300,000. Now, some parts of Syria were populated almost entirely by Christians during pre-Islamic times. And in the last few years, these areas, of course, have been purged as rebel forces target Christians for kidnapping and violence. Islamic State targets Christians as well. And before the Arab uprising or the Arab Spring, so before 2012 inside Syria, the city of Homs had 80,000 Christians. 80,000. Then what do we have now? Well, the last Christian was murdered in 2012. So it didn't take long for those 80,000 Christians to have to leave. Now, if we even were looking at Jerusalem, now this is an interesting statistic just because of the fact that Israel experiences or gives the most freedoms, gives freedom of religion to anyone inside their nation and can really be seen as the bastion of human rights for Christians, for Muslims, or for Jews. And yet, even here in Jerusalem, there has been a great reduction, at least by a proportion of the city, of the Christian inhabitants. In 1946, the city of Jerusalem's population was made up of 97,000 Jews, 31,000 Muslims, and 30,000 Christians. Muslims and Christians each represented about 20%. Now, going to 2009, that's the last date that I'm just going to quote here, the number of Muslims in the city 2009 had soared to 230,000. It's up over that now, or 33%, while the number of Christians has fallen to less than 14,000, or less than 2%. Less than 2% of Jerusalem's population is made up of Christians. Now, why is that? They have been given the freedoms that they need to exist, obviously. But these are obviously mostly Arab Palestinian Christians, and they live in Arab Palestinian environments where the number of Muslims, not Islamic State, just normal, if I can just say that in quotes, Muslims. And yet in that environment, even in Israel, they are fleeing, they're leaving. The plight of Christians, or the flight of Christians here in Jerusalem, is almost entirely due to Muslim persecution. One Palestinian, René Espinoli, he said this. This is from an article, I think, about a year ago. He said, "You feel like somebody is choking you and there is nowhere, no way out. You need to get out of here and find something else." They are the Christians inside Jerusalem, in these Palestinian neighborhoods. So while the Islamic State is not hunting Christians in Jerusalem, we still have an exodus. And you just wonder if the Vatican sees the Christian plight in Jerusalem in even more greater terms than what it sees throughout the rest of the Middle East. They might not be getting blown up, but they're scared. And the facts are that they're leaving as well. So this is the great exodus of our day, Christians from the Middle East. I just want to continue back to this article now again. It's entitled from World Crunch, When the West Lets Christianity Die in Its Cradle. And it gets to the point here that I want to focus on for the remainder of the show. It says, they'll soon be limited to a residual presence and will be condemned to keep a low profile. It's talking about those that are still in, those Christians still in the Middle East. Despite the official indifference of Westerners, the fate of Middle Eastern Christians affects the most intimate corners of what we could call our consciousness of civilization. For those who, one way or another, are getting into action, for them, call to mind the highest ethical demands of civic commitment. The Middle East Christians are the witnesses of the origin of a religion, the memory of which they keep through a liturgy that is as diverse as it is splendid. At least to him, he writes. To put it differently, they are the keepers of the living origins of a religion that went on to transform Europe's historical being. And you don't need to be a believer to acknowledge this. What he's saying there is very important, and it's something that this world has forgotten, largely. He's saying that the religion that originated in the Middle East, went to Europe, and transformed Europe's historical being, time after time after time, through Holy Roman Empire after Holy Roman Empire. We have resurrections of that continuously through Israel, through Europe's history. And you don't need to be a believer to acknowledge this, he says. Look at the history of Europe, and it's a Christian heritage. It's a Christian history. Then he writes, I hope I'm not abusing this conventional term, but shouldn't the issue of Middle Eastern Christians wake up European civilization to its core identity? Shouldn't we see what's happening, he writes, over in the Middle East to our Christian brothers, he's saying? That is our identity. That's where we've got our identity from. Europe, at its core, looking into its history, has a Christian identity. Shouldn't we in Europe and the West be telling ourselves that these attacks are also aimed at us? At the very least, European civilization should foster a special relationship with Christians in the Middle East. It should feel a form of existential closeness towards them, knowing that part of its origins come from there. Definitely. Definitely. He's saying, shouldn't we worry? Shouldn't we look over there to the Middle East and see what's happening to Christianity and recognize that that is our history? That is our identity as well? Well, if he's talking like that, I mean, he needs to go back a couple hundred years, a few hundred years, a thousand years. And that's exactly what the Crusaders were thinking. That is exactly what led some of those thoughts to the Crusades of old. Then he continues here, he writes, the spiritual momentum that once infused Europe and gave it specific genius comes from a world that's pretty much sunken and of which Middle Eastern Christians are the last guardians. This implies, however, that Europe must finally acknowledge its Christian core. Or to be more precise, that it stopped trying to erase that legacy as if it were an existential stain, keeping it from fully embracing the universal. Europe needs to stop, in other words, imagining that it can only build itself through deconstruction. No, it can build itself through unity. And what type of unity is he talking about? The unity that looks back to history and sees that we have something to share with the Christians in the Middle East. Then he writes, the double attack of April 9, that's the one that took place in Egypt, probably won't awaken minds. We've become numb to the most extreme savagery and violence. But this shouldn't stop us from calling things as they are. What we are witnessing is no less than an attempt to exterminate a people and, in a certain way, a civilization. And yet, being we decided a long time ago that Christianity was the religion of the dominating West, and that it can't be anything other than the persecutor and never the persecuted, we can't imagine it as a victim. And yet he's saying is what we're seeing here in the Middle East is the attempt to exterminate a people, Christians from there, and in a way a civilization. Our ideological tainted glasses distort our relationship to the world. We're refusing to hear the pain of communities we're sentencing to death, to the most humiliating submission, to exile. Nobody claims to have the perfect political solution to defend Middle Eastern Christians. But when it comes to politics, there's no such thing as a magic wand. But European civilization should know that in its relationship with Christians in the Middle East, and its reaction to their persecution, what's also at stake is its own soul. If Europe's going to sit back and do nothing, they've got to remember that their soul, as he calls it, their deeply rooted identity, though they might not like to accept it at this point, comes from a foundation of Christianity, or at least Catholicism's version of it. And what he's saying here is, you need to find your identity, Europe. And maybe what's going to come from this eventually is that when these Mohammedans, as they're called in times past, when they start attacking more and more Christians, as they're doing, and when they get closer and closer and closer to Europe, maybe they'll recognize, maybe Europeans will recognize that an attack on a Middle Eastern Christian is an attack on them. Because that they share a history. They share a belief system. What is Europe's identity? They don't know. There are some that do know. There are some that recognize that the only way to unify Europe is to get back to the roots of Christianity. And this is what this man here writing for World Crunch is arguing. You need to get back to that history. And that history has everything to do with Christianity. Well, the Bible also indicates that Europe is going to remember its Christian roots. Now, does that mean that every single European is going to become a believer in that sense? Probably not. Probably not. They don't need to. They don't need to. They just need an identity to revolve around, to help them come together, to unite. You even look at this in Israel. I mean, regardless of how many people in Israel are actually practicing Orthodox Jews, being Jewish, Jewishness as a history is unifying, whether you're a practicing Jew or not. It's a unifying factor. It's something to rally the country around. And people fight for that. People fight for that Jewish history. People fight for that Jewish identifying factor. Now, with Europe, what's their history? Not all of them are religiously Catholics. Secularism has obviously taken over, as it's taken over in Israel as well. Yet Israelis have something to fight for. I mean, Israelis, to get into Israel, where'd they come from? They came from all over the world. They came from Russia, from Spain, from Morocco, Ethiopia, America, Britain, Eastern Europe, from France. And they had a different nation before, and they came to Israel and they fought for Israel. Why? Because they were Jewish. Now, many, obviously, people that are fighting in Israel, they don't believe in God. They're not religious in that sense. Yet their collective Jewish history, regardless of from what political borders they were from, transcends those national borders that they came from. The Moroccan Jew that arrives in Israel, he now fights for Israel. He now fights for that collective identity, collective Jewish identity. Really, if the European Union wanted to look at a case study of what was successful to unite a nation, they need to look at this, look at Israel as a example of foreign nations or foreigners coming together, sharing a collective history and rallying around that point. Now, Europeans, they're never going to fight for Europe or are never going to unite under a European flag unless they see that their history transcends their national borders. And that history is the Catholic Church. That's Europe's common ground. Whether they're religiously Catholic or not, just as whether an Israeli is Jewish, is Orthodox or not, that's his identity. And what this article is saying is, once Europe recognizes that that is the foundation to their identity, this Catholic heritage, this Christian heritage, then they are going to see what's happening in the Middle East right now as an attack on them. And then, just maybe then, somebody will be willing to go and stand up for those Middle Eastern Christians. Now, they are going to do that. Bible prophecy indicates that that is going to happen. Now, right now at Watch Jerusalem, we have an article from our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flurry, and it discusses the history of the Crusades, and that is a united Europe, in the sense, coming down to rescue Jerusalem from Islam, or even the Jews at times. They did fight against the Jews as well. And this article entitled The Last Crusade indicates, looking in the Bible, that it is going to happen again. Now, what's going to motivate them to do that? Looking in the prophecies of Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40, there are a number of indicators that, not as opposed to or including some geopolitical concerns, Europe is going to be motivated to come back down into the Middle East because of what's happening in Jerusalem as well, this time around as well. Now, you really need to read this article, The Last Crusade. It's going to inform you of history. It's going to inform you of the true motivations of the Crusades. And before you discount that just as history, we just quoted heavily today an author that is looking at the crusade that not just the Islamic State is on right now, but other Arab nations, Persian nations against Christians, the plight against Christians in the Middle East. They're looking at that in the context of a crusade. And then that author was saying, hey, we've got to remember our roots. We've got to recognize that this is us that's under attack as well. And then we've got to do something about it. He didn't cite the prophecies. I mean, it was written in World Crunch. But basically, you could add some scriptures to that, and it would indicate what really is going to happen. Now, to inform yourself once again, please go to Watch Jerusalem. It's still on the front page of this article. Just scroll down till you find it. I'll leave it in the show links as well, so that you can get right to it if you want to. It's a big article. It's comprehensive, but it's well worth a read to educate yourself on the history of the Crusades, and then also what is just around the corner, what people are actually calling for right now. One final crusade. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem. I'm Brent Nuchtegal. Next week we'll be in Jerusalem to give the program to you from there. If you'd like to send some feedback, you can do that by sending emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. They will come to me, or you can look at it for our page on Facebook and like that, or follow us on Twitter, and make sure that you keep up to date with what is happening in Jerusalem. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time.